Topics you care about by people you trust. This is The Clear Perspective, your healthcare cybersecurity, compliance, and privacy podcast. And now for the show.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this latest episode of Clearwater's Healthcare Defenders podcast series. I'm thrilled to be featuring Michael Gross, the Manager of Cybersecurity Intelligence for Cleveland Clinic, in today's episode. Talking with Michael today is Clearwater's Vice President of Consulting Services, Dave Bailey. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Dave.
Well, hello, everyone, and thanks so much, Julie. I'm excited to be here with Michael Gross, the Cybersecurity Intelligence Manager at Cleveland Clinic, to really have just a great discussion, Michael, about your background, about cybersecurity, about the challenges and the things that we're seeing today and what we can look forward to in 2024. And with that said, I just want to give a great big welcome to Michael. So tell me about your background and a little bit your role in at Cleveland Clinic.
Thank you, David and Julie. Pleasure to be here. So I've been with the Cleveland Clinic for close to 14 years now. I've held a couple different roles. Most of them have been, or all of them have been within the security realm. So first area was under business resiliency, and I did that for like around 5 years. Then when we went to, I moved into data loss prevention, and then after that, I moved into to management and took on the cyber defense squad. The cyber defense squad is basically the team that's put together to defend against any attacks against the Cleveland Clinic.
I think one of the things that certainly resonated with me, you talk about resiliency, and I think it's so important in today's, cybersecurity, mission for healthcare sectors to understand resiliency and know that the types of attacks that are happening, you need to be resilient in order to survive with the least amount of impact. Ultimately, from a healthcare perspective, I know it was an interesting experience for me as I transitioned out of work with the federal government into healthcare. I think back in the 2009 timeframe, when I worked at a two-hospital health system, I knew cybersecurity really well, but it was such a humbling experience to move and understand healthcare and care delivery. Why healthcare for you, and what do you see? Is it, being a cybersecurity professional inside of healthcare, what is that like for you?
In healthcare, it is definitely a challenge because, healthcare has traditionally been in the back burner when it comes to technology in the past years. Until around, I would say, 2019, when we started seeing the uptick, because then 2020, when COVID hit, and the research for the COVID vaccination and everything was underway, there was the attack surface of the healthcare environment grew exponentially. There are hospitals, 80% of ransomware attacks were against healthcare organizations and hospitals. And that was a turning point, I believe, in seeing a lot of healthcare organizations start bolstering their cybersecurity and their defenses, that they have their posture against defending against these threat actors and malicious attacks.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you look at the timing, what happened at COVID, how not only obviously everyone experienced such a major change in their, personal professional lives, but we saw this insurgence and this reality that, you have these, human threat, humans that are working for cyber criminals and threat actors that are really starting to, target the industry and be extremely successful. Being that you're a large organization, a complex organization, can you talk a little bit about how you're structured with your team to protect the organization? What is cybersecurity protection and operations look like for you?
Certainly. At the Cleveland Clinic, we're structured where cybersecurity is part of ITD. We are outside of ITD, but we still report up to the CIO. And we also used to have there was a chief integrity officer, which they've shifted those positions around now, but we used to have a dotted line to them as well. They've kind of moved that realm outside, but now we have the cybersecurity organization. The community itself is made up of multiple groups of areas. So we've got our cybersecurity assurance, which is our governance, risk, and compliance. That's where you have your policies and so forth. Plus, you have your business resiliency is under that area. There is cybersecurity intelligence, of course. We have the traditional blue team, red team, or we call it cyber defense, and attack surface reduction. So cyber defense is made up of cyber monitoring, incident response, and threat hunting, as well as we're developing a insider risk management program that's going to fall under cyber defense. And on the other side of the house, on the other side of intelligence is attack surface reduction. Within that team, there is a vulnerability management and a red team. So we have red team that's consistently, working on attacks to develop against us and against the blue team, and to be able to we pressure test the environment at all times. And we do purple teaming on multiple times a week. So we're constantly doing during an hour session or an hour session, we'll be pressure testing our defenses. And seeing where we need to test and tune some of our rules to make that a little more resilient. Past that, we go over to the advisory team. The advisory team is kind of our front door. They also have the architects. It's where the architects, cybersecurity architects, come from. And then there is the solutions teams, which are made up of identity access management, cybersecurity protections, and cybersecurity data and applications, or cybersecurity DNA. So those are all under the solutions area. Identity access management, of course, is our identity team. So the protections is they basically do the platform management of a lot of our cybersecurity platforms. And then DNA is our cloud data and application protection. So application security. Wherever there's, say, data out in our network, we're looking as well as they handle our data loss prevention platform.
That sounds certainly comprehensive, and I think it's outstanding that you have those very specific and critical focus areas inside the clinic in order to build a resilient environment. I just wanted to add, even today, like we meet regularly internally as a team to talk about, threat intelligence, right? That's a lot to say about, what information is out there. And we find it extremely challenging today to look at the volume of information is there and how do you turn that information into relevancy and then act on it. Just curious to find out from the complex organization that you have, what does it take in order to, take all of the resources, all of the information, and then, turn it into actionable information. What does that look like for you?
Right. So under the intelligence community, we actually have a threat intelligence area as well that they currently report up to our director in that area, and they are constantly looking deep in dark web and looking at other data sources to be able to mine the intelligence data, and then we leverage that intelligence data with our purple teaming. So we utilize that intelligence data to be able to develop our attacks and so forth, as well as we publish out a daily digest of threat intelligence information that goes to a lot of our C-levels. So what happens is what used to happen was we'd have to be in a reaction mode a lot of times because there may be something going on in cybersecurity land that they're reading about in the Wall Street Journal, but they don't have any information on it. So they would go to our CISO and ask him for the information. And, of course, then he would trickle that down to us and we'd have to gather all the information and send it back up the chain. So we put out this publication on a daily basis that goes out to them, that they have the information before it's even in the Wall Street Journal. So we have base it around, you know, general attacks that are out there, general threats that are out in the environment. Then we have things that are focused on healthcare. Then we have anything that's focused on the Cleveland Clinic. And then what we do is we illustrate, you know, where the Cleveland Clinic is and how its posture is to defend against those attacks.
No, I think having the ability, I think it's one of the biggest challenges in the sector today is to look at all the information that's out there and you know, utilizing your resources to the to the most effective way you can, and you know, being able to turn that information into action, and you know, it's certainly awesome to hear how you have that structured. I know, having seen many organization types inside the sector that it is a challenge for them to be able to you know, act to all the information that's out there. You know, what are you thinking about, you know, from a strategy standpoint, and what's important as far as 2024 goes?
So there's a lot of discussion, of course, around generative AI. That is a big topic of discussion now. There's also the post-quantum era, right? Where the Cleveland Clinic has been, you know, we were lucky enough to be able to work with IBM, partner with IBM, and we host the one of the first quantum computers and the first quantum computer in healthcare at one of our facilities. So that's an exciting time. But there's a lot of things. What's quantum computing mean to cybersecurity? Mostly encryption, you know, right? You're going to look at, you know, what's the future of encryption with quantum computing? The current encryption, of course, is very, it's not easily breakable. It's not something that a quantum computer can easily break either. They've put it together, you know, there's been quite a bit of structure put up around it, so where there's, it's not easy to be broken. The generative AI, there's a lot of question around that and how it's being used in our daily lives, right? There's, you know, people use it to write papers or write contracts or develop software packages. Well, you can purchase a personalized version or a private version of ChatGPT. Doesn't mean a threat actor could not do the same thing and utilize that to sit there and develop, continually develop, like, alternate versions of malware, right? Things that morph on their own, you know, and it could help them develop that. And it'd be privatized for them. It's gathering information from outside sources, but also their information that it's learning on, you know, this is being possibly utilized in multiple instances, and it's being defended against. So now they throw some different scenarios at it and saying, okay, now it's being blocked by Windows Defender. What's the next Microsoft Defender? Then what's the next step? How can we get past Microsoft Defender? You know, what are the next steps we can do? They could use the generative AI on their own take to be able to build more malicious malware that's evolving even and ever changing.
I know here at Clearwater, we've been putting a pretty large focus on artificial intelligence, what it's going to mean to the sector, how do you look at governance and risk around AI? And while I believe, I don't want this statement I'm about to make to be controversial, because I don't intend it to be, you know, I think AI is here to certainly enhance, and the power that it can bring and the capability that it can bring to not only healthcare, but, you know, all our lives. I think we're just at the surface of what that can be. But I believe from a security standpoint, AI is a disruptor, because I don't know if everyone really understands what it means to look at AI risk and implement all of the appropriate and reasonable controls that are needed in order to say that, you know, you've got some trustworthy AI systems. So I think it needs to be a focus, you know, moving forward, and more companies are going to be introducing AI technologies in all their platforms. And, you know, I think as security professionals, we're going to have to adapt our thinking and our processes to really come up with good risk decisions.
I totally agree. We've got to have some controls in place that are going to be able to, you know, make sure that our end user teams everybody's a caregiver at the Cleveland Clinic, but our caregivers are utilizing the platform in a productive manner, and also without, you know, putting any PHI or PII into the interface. We have our own privatized version of ChatGPT today. So we have that, and it's starting to be utilized within the organization. But it's just at its infancy. So it's easy to develop, easy to adopt. They just need to make sure that people are steered to the right location, and they're not utilizing the outside public version, which then could potentially take any, you know, also intellectual property and so forth, and be sent out to the internet. So we want to keep that, you know, in-house.
If we look at the type of threat actors today, you know, they're developing their capabilities as a service. So other threat actors can use it. They're like enterprises. They, you know, they're very structured, and in some cases, you know, for them to be able to take advantage, you know, we would all be naive if we don't, you know, if we believe that the threat actors are not taking advantage of the capabilities to make their attacks more effective, you know, more efficient. And you know, we certainly have to be ready with our defenses in order to, you know, in order to put ourselves in the best position we can to minimize the impacts of those attacks. So, what advice would you have for other cybersecurity leaders, you know, certainly those in the healthcare space, you know, as a professional where you sit today and looking at your teams and your capabilities, you know, what advice could you give to other folks trying to do what you're doing, or, you know, lessons learned, those, you know, those types of things?
I mean, definitely you hit on a few key points earlier. The cybersecurity insurance is a must have anymore. You know, having retainers with outside organizations, well, legal retainers, as well as incident response retainers. So if you do have some type of incident occur, that you have a team of experts come in, and you have that backing of that expert. So if there are some things from like the Health and Human Services, HHS, come back and they look at that, it's helpful to have all of those instances as well as the cyber insurance to help you, you know, be able to recover in the event that something happened. Look at your defenses, you know, try to do defense in depth as much as possible. Diverse in some of your network carriers as well. Don't rely on just one network carrier or one provider. Diversify. This way, if one carrier, AT&T or either one, gets hit with a large attack, a DDoS attack, then you have another connection that's up and available. You're not down completely. The majority of things are being moved to the cloud. So make sure you have a resilient plan for that as well. Your business resilient plans are the key to your survival, right? In order to be able to make sure your applications are recovered from, you know, some type of disaster or outage, that you have some type of way to know how to operate in the event that something's not available, and you can maintain your patient care during that time. And having those resilience plan tested on a regular basis. So
that's some really, really good advice. I think, you know, changing the behaviors of, you know, kind of the traditional thinking where we were in a, you know, in a state of, you know, annual testing and looking at a plan or a process. I think it just has to become, you know, normal behavior with regular testing and validating and understanding, you know, the current state that, you know, that you're in, so you can, you know, you can adapt quickly, because, you know, we're, we're beyond the point of, you know, maybe just a, I say just, not that it's not serious, because it's very serious, where it's just a fine or some financial impact. It comes down into patient safety. It comes down into business operations. It's really your ability to operate your business moving forward. So, certainly, right. I think that's really, really sound advice. And I want to thank you for the opportunity today. I think it was great to learn about you and learn about your team at Cleveland Clinic. It's really exciting to know that, you know, we've got some of those capabilities that we see a healthcare sector that has a lot of opportunity, I'll say, in order to get to a point where they can, you know, ingest threat intelligence on an active basis and react to it and ensure that their defenses are up to par on a regular basis. So really, thank you for coming out and, you know, talking to us today. I'll leave you with the last word. So it was a pleasure, Michael.
Thanks so much, David and Julie, again, for this interview.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed Dave and Michael's conversation. If you know a healthcare defender we should be talking to, let us know. You can reach us on our website at clearwatersecurity.com.